afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday, to get you through this coronavirus crisis. In a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. On the Jason Rancho, live on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. An inmate released by Jay Inslee due to the coronavirus. Well, guess what? He tried to strangle a six-year-old woman to death. Yeah, shocking. Despite the fear-mongering, there hasn't been a rash of anti-Asian hate crimes. We're going to dive into what the data actually says. Plus, the city of Tacoma seems pretty ready to back drug decriminalization. What kind of drugs? Actually, the question should be, which drugs won't be covered by what they want to do? This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home, so let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
A convicted nonviolent offender released early from Washington jails because of the coronavirus crisis due to a policy by Governor Jay Inslee. He just did something that no one saw coming at all. I don't think anyone could have perceived that this is even within the realm of possibilities, that a felon would recommit a crime.
These are human beings. They have families. They have kids.
They're human beings. They have families. They have kids. We have to release them so that they can recommit. He decided to go after an elderly woman, 60 years old. She was out on a hike. She was using the interurban trail in Everett. She was just trying to get out of the home because she's been cooped up inside like so many others. She's trying to get some exercise. Maybe she's trying to let some of the stress go away, enjoy nature, enjoy the good weather, when all of a sudden, from behind her back, police allege 33-year-old Matthew Corey started to choke her. Started to choke her.
These are human beings. They have families. They have kids.
I can't tell anymore if she's talking about the criminal or the victim here. Oh, it's the criminal. We have a group of activists trying to get these folks out of jail. Also, they can pull these kinds of stunts. Now, thankfully, in this case, the elderly woman was able to get away. She was able to escape his grip. She ran. She screamed. Someone called 911. Police show up. And thankfully, they catch this guy. Now, according to Q13... Matthew Corey told investigators he'd been using meth for 2 weeks. Hadn't slept in 7 days. He didn't even remember attacking the woman. Oh, well, if that's the case. I mean, Peyton, he didn't remember attacking the woman. If you don't remember attacking someone, did the attack even take place?
Yeah, it's like if a tree falls in the woods, nobody's around to see it. This
did
attacker.
Did it really fall? Does it make a noise? I'm curious. So now this guy is back in custody. Now this guy is the latest on this list of folks who have been released by Governor Jay Inslee only to then recommit another crime. And these, by the way, are the crimes that we know of. You want to know what this guy's background is? Because remember, going into this coronavirus crisis, the governor said he was only going to release people who were eligible, who didn't have any... He called them nonviolent. Now, when I see a 33-year-old who's released from jail, you understand that 33 is not in that age demographic that puts you at a higher risk of mortality associated with the coronavirus crisis. They release him. Now, this latest arrest adds to his criminal record, which has 11 arrests in total. Oh, hey, 7 felony convictions. 7 felony convictions. 2 misdemeanors.
These are human beings.
They're human
they have
beings.
Families. They have kids.
Listen to these activists. They're human beings. Who could have seen this coming? Who could have predicted that this would be the result of this ridiculous coronavirus policy? Oh, lots of folks, you guys listening, you saw it coming. I saw it coming. Robert Snazza saw it coming. He's the Lewis County Sheriff.
They're in there for a reason. They committed a crime. And now because we're in this crisis, we're going to release individuals who want to get out.
They just want to get out so then they could recommit another crime. Now, of course, when Q13 asked for an interview with the governor, he declined. instead releasing a statement, which I will not be reading because we're not going to put his propaganda out there. The reason why he's not going to do an interview is because he knows he cannot defend his policies. He has no clue what he's doing. He is making it up as he goes along. And I certainly give some rope to folks trying to navigate their way out of running a state during a pandemic. It's not like anyone saw this coming in any meaningful way. You always say you're going to prepare for the worst, but when the worst happens, it's still the worst. And so you offer some leeway, I think we should, to any leader, Republican or Democrat. And I think early on, I gave the governor credit when it was due and leeway when it was reasonable. But then he kept screwing up. Then he kept acting political. Then he kept failing to lead, being inconsistent. And that inconsistency and his political leadership here gets us this. The guy who's released, who almost immediately starts taking meth again. How weird is that? It's almost like when we say releasing drug offenders who have committed crimes in the past might go back to the drugs and then recommit crime. It's almost like we could have seen this coming. Except literally everyone did, and we said it, and he didn't care. This is a governor who is in so over his head, it's scary. It's scary. It's literally scary. Ask this woman if she's scared to go out again. Ask anyone who hears a story like this if they're scared to go out. And I guess we have to change the rules. You're going to have to, we're returning back to the buddy system. I mean, within 6 feet of each other, don't forget. You still have to socially distance yourself from the buddies, but don't go out on hikes alone, I guess. That's the state that Governor Inslee wants to give us. Such a coward, unwilling to talk to anyone who might ask more than one question. Remember, when he does his press briefings, you get one question, no follow-up. So if the governor were to say something like, oh, I don't know, a complete and utter lie, no one gets to just immediately call him out on it. Now, of course, he's not going to come on this show, and I get that. He's scared. But the fact that he can't go and answer to one of his policies and how it is hurting people just truly shows you what kind of coward he is. A total coward. And I give credit, by the way, to a whole bunch of Democrats who do come on this show when we disagree. Adam Smith, don't agree with him. Rick Larson, don't agree with him. They come on the show. Kudos to them. By the way, did Inslee respond?
No.
Or request? No.
No. Not even a response.
Oh, they didn't even respond?
No, just ignored.
Okay. Okay. At some point, the rejection starts to hurt. He's swiping. He's ghosting me. He swiped left on our request.
He doesn't like you, but he listens to you.
He does listen to me. That is true. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So it kind of seems sometimes like activists in this area are hoping that there's going to be a whole bunch of coronavirus related hate crimes because then it would feed into their worldview, their narrative that this city, this state, this country, this world is racist and out to get everybody. Of course, they end up going and saying, oh, Donald Trump, he's to blame. He did this. This is life in 2020, in Trump's America. They want you to think that Asian Americans and just Asians in general can't even go outside without being victimized in a hate crime. They truly believe that. Now, the good news is the data doesn't actually betrays their hopes. The data actually betrays their talking points and narratives. There's been no significant rise in anti-Asian hate crimes in Seattle. In fact, I got the data coming from the Seattle Police Department to show that there wasn't any meaningful response to that dumb PSA that Seattle PD Chief Carmen Best put out encouraging people to call 911 to report racist name-calling, as if, by the way, racist name-calling is illegal. It is not. It's racist, it's disturbing, it's disgusting, it can be 100% scary. but it is not a crime. Now, we should celebrate this data, of course. Normal people would look at the, oh, hey, that's good news. Despite everybody in the News Tribune and the Seattle Times and at The Stranger and everywhere else, you know, they're telling us all of these hate crimes. They had all these anecdotes and whatnot. It's good news that the data doesn't actually back it up. No, instead, they're kind of silent. Now, when this pandemic actually began, what did we get? A whole bunch of hot takes. Locally, nationally, in print, on air. These hot takes about the fears that Americans would target Asians, blaming them for the coronavirus. Now, they didn't really present any data. They presented third-hand anecdotes, fears of what potentially could happen. And it was framed in a way that made it sound like it was already happening. Matt Driscoll, the wokest columnist over at the News Tribune, he proudly highlighted the plight of Asian Americans and how they would become victims of these hate crimes. He wanted to tell their story of despair, only the story, again, thankfully, didn't have any data. It didn't even have an actual crime. In fact, I'm looking at a quote here from the Tacoma Human Rights Commissioner, Nick Bayard. And in this piece, it says, overall, Bayard noted there have been no reports of hate crimes within Tacoma, describing what he's heard as general concerns. That seems kind of important. And doesn't that push in the face of the claim that there's a whole bunch of anti-Asian coronavirus hate crimes? The only thing that he printed in there that was specific from this guy was a business, quote, posting information about the Chinese virus, quote unquote, in a work setting. Yeah, that's not a hate crime. It's not illegal in any way, shape, or form. It's actually fact. The virus started in China. The communist regime tried to cover it up, and they are responsible for death and illness of hundreds of thousands of people. That's it. The only basis for his concern was that we would have a rash of hate crimes was his worldview. Then you go to the socialist, or the social justice columnist, I should say, over at the Seattle Times. Her name is Naomi Ishisaka. Now, immediately, in early February, she was calling out yellow peril, which actually, maybe it's my age, I've never heard of. I've never heard that phrase. Have you heard that phrase before?
I'm Asian, and I have not heard that phrase.
I acknowledge that maybe this is a phrase that predates me. I'm 38 years old. Maybe I just don't realize it. But she was calling out the dangers of yellow peril. Folks choosing to blame and harass Asians over the coronavirus. And in early February, how weird is this? She was downplaying the threat of the coronavirus. She was saying, actually, you should be way more concerned with the flu, because way more people die from the flu than from the coronavirus. Instead, she said, you know what? You got to be focused on yellow peril. She warned us not to, quote, let our fear drive us to create a new yellow peril and perpetuate racist patterns of discrimination and scapegoating. Only instead of focusing on the threat of the coronavirus, she was pushing a worldview. Americans are racist. The country hates people of color, all of them. And by the way, a handful of anecdotes make our point. Believe us. And so I reached out to the SPD and I asked them for the anti-Asian coronavirus related hate crimes, the ones that were committed or incidents. Because sometimes they say bias incidents, and this is why you got to pay attention to the language. Incident that is biased does not mean it is criminal. It does not mean it is illegal. It doesn't even mean it happened. Now, activists want you to believe that there's this rise of crimes in the area, that producer Peyton, walking to his car at the end of his shift, has to be very, very careful because, oh my God, someone gonna blame you for coronavirus.
It's so scary out there. They attack me with their words.
Did they?
Yes, every day.
Every really?
Monday through Friday, every time I leave.
Every day, but only here?
25 feet from the front door what? To my car, and they get me every day, Jason.
Did you report it?
No.
Well, then you don't count in this data.
Oh, I knew I was forgetting something.
So between March 10th and May 1st, I got a note from the SPD, a document listed listing anti-Asian hate incidents which may be related to the coronavirus. So, which may be related to the coronavirus. Okay, fine. I thought I'd go through it. So we got seven crimes. Now, during this time period, of the seven that they gave me, only three appear to be actual crimes. And of those three, they're not all definitively tied to the coronavirus, but to be fair, they said may be tied to the coronavirus. Okay, three. Two on the list were not anti-Asian in nature at all. They had nothing to do with Asian people. Nothing at all. In fact, after I brought one of them to their attention, they decided to pull it from the document. So here are the issues that are not crimes. They're scary. They're alarming, and you can argue that they're racist. I'll go with you on that. One Asian man complained about juveniles shouting coronavirus from a house as he and his family walked by. Now, according to the SPD records, they say the juveniles who were in the house who allegedly did this said they didn't do it. Now, to me, that means they probably did it because I don't trust young people, and they were probably doing it in a racist way, but it was probably a joke. I don't think it was nefarious intent, but it doesn't matter. It's racist. It's wrong.
Kids are the worst.
Kids are dumb. They're big dum-dums, every single one of them. Now, another incident saw a man, quote, described as having white grocery bags tied around his neck and as possibly homeless. He was homeless. Angrily telling an Asian woman, it's caused by you. So that's a homeless crime by a guy who kind of sounds like he's mentally ill. I don't know what you're doing. I mean, maybe is that the new fashion trend? The necklace of white grocery bags?
No. No, not even slightly. No, the kids are not doing that. No.
Okay. While this is bad and I don't like it and we should all condemn it proudly and stick up for anyone who has to deal with this nonsense, these are not crimes. They're rude, they're racist, they're scary, they can be, but they're not crimes. Then I see a complainant reporting three young men posting Patriot Front stickers throughout the neighborhood. Now, Patriot Front is an anti-Semitic white supremacist group. That's not an anti-Asian crime. It's not a crime at all. I don't like anyone who's a part of the Patriot Front. I don't want their stickers up in my neighborhood. These people are disgusting, despicable racists. But this is not an anti-Asian coronavirus-related hate crime. Then they tell me another complainant reported that a man, possibly high, was drawing swastikas and the words Nazi takeover on two building windows. Now, the complainant in this case was Asian. So out of abundance of caution, they decided to list this as a possible anti-Asian hate crime. It is not an anti-Asian hate crime. I will raise my hand. The swastika is about me. The whole thing about wanting Nazis to take over has nothing to do with Peyton. It has everything to do with Jason.
Are you sure there wasn't like one Nazi out there that just hated Asians?
I mean, I'm supposing that's possible, but I'm going to say this is very clearly not an anti-Asian hate crime. And it's important to point this stuff out. Now, on this list, three of them absolutely were crimes. An Asian woman was assaulted by a man who screamed an obscenity at her and said, "Get out, China." A second had a man spitting at an Asian woman saying, "That's what you get used to it." A third, a very intoxicated homeless man, was shouting slurs at Asian people who were wandering by. He was arrested, but by the way, not booked into jail because of the coronavirus booking policy that says most misdemeanors get tossed from having to serve jail time, at least in the moment. Now, since I wrote this, one extra case has happened, which appears to be a crime. A man pushing the face of a guy, like trying to tear off. It was an Asian couple. The man trying to pull off his mask and made a slur against him. I hope we find that guy, and I hope we arrest him. I'd like to see him actually booked into jail, but unfortunately, in this world right now, we don't actually put criminals in jail. Now, those are four crimes. They're crimes. They're presumably hate crimes. They're disgusting. All of us should call it out whenever we can. And we should be very, very alert to make sure that we don't see a rash of anti-Asian hate crimes. But we're not experiencing that right now. People will point to one crime, as many did today on Twitter, to say my whole theory is wrong. There was that one hate crime today, so you're wrong. I don't think that there's no such thing as an anti-Asian coronavirus-related hate crime. Hate crimes happen. They do. Racism exists. Sexism exists. Homophobia exists. stupid people with stupid bigoted positions 100% exist. The difference is I don't think they permeate every single segment of our population, of our society. The difference is I understand the difference between this data and a narrative that is pushing a very specific worldview. They want you to believe that this country is evil and racist because it serves their political agenda. They've got blinders on, and sometimes all they see is race. Other times they're doing it because they're bad faith. They're nefarious in their intent. But when you tell someone over and over and over and over again, be it someone who's Asian or African American or Latino or Jewish or gay, that they're hated, that people are out to get them, let me tell you, as someone who at least ticks off two of the boxes, making me a minority, Jewish and gay, when you think you're constantly being targeted, when you think you didn't get a job or an apartment or a raise because you're Jewish or gay or black or Asian, if you think everything that happens, you getting cut off when you're driving, or maybe someone knocking into you in a rude way in a crowded elevator, when you think you're being targeted, you don't have a very good life. You are miserable. You are miserable 24/7, and it hangs on you. You're stressed out. You feel like people are out to get you, and then you start to build this anger inside. People telling you that you're a victim all the time turns you into one without even a reason. And then all of a sudden, you go out of your way and you look for reasons to claim that you're a victim. I didn't get that job because I'm a Jew and that person hates Jews. I'm told all the time anti-Semitism is alive and well. Although, weirdly bad example, because the one hate group that is continuing, the hate crimes that are going up against Jews. But Jews don't get any special coverage, not here anymore, because we're just white people who have privilege. That's how the left views us. Call out racism when it happens. Every single instance you should call it out. And when there is an actual hate crime associated with the coronavirus or anything else, we're going to continue to highlight it on the show as we have in the past. But I'm not going to pretend one or two cases, or in this case, four cases, means Peyton can't go out to his car alone without someone protecting him. And you know what? It ain't going to be me, because I push you in right into the... I'm running. I don't want to get hurt.
Please? Nobody else is here when I leave.
Sorry. You're out of luck, man. Now, if you want to help me shine a spotlight on this, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you my link. When we come back, sounds like the Tacoma City Council is ready to back the decriminalization of all drugs. We're going to get into it on the Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. We're live on this Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I get rather snarky on Twitter. Very snarky. And sometimes I need some people to root me on. Because if someone doesn't root on my snark, the snark level starts to decrease, and then I'm unhappy. The only thing that brings me joy in this world is my snark. And so if you would follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JasonRantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z, all one word, or text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770, I sure would appreciate it. Progressive activists are pushing to decriminalize the personal use of all drugs. We're talking about heroin, we're talking about cocaine, we're talking about fentanyl, meth. Now, they say decriminalize, it really means legalize. They will say, no, that's not what it means. Decriminalize just means you're not going to go to jail. You could still get a penalty for it, a ticket. Of course, that doesn't really ever happen, not here in Washington State. So they're trying to legalize every single drug you can think of. You name it, it would be legal for personal use. And that seems to be the worst possible thing to do when you've got an opioid crisis that continues to grow. The worst thing you can do during an opioid crisis is making it less stigmatizing to be a drug user. People will say, we don't want to stigmatize folks. I don't want to stigmatize people. I want to stigmatize drug use. Drug use is bad. You know that, yes? I'm not saying an addict, someone who's legitimately dealing with a medical condition and addiction to whatever substance, I don't want to shame them. I want to shame the use of drugs. I want you to not think shooting up is okay, because it's not. It's killing these people. It appears right now the entire Tacoma Council is on board this idea. They are backing, according to Matt Driscoll over at the TNT, an initiative, 1715. It's being pushed by a whole bunch of activists across the state. It would work by keeping some addicts or drug dealers out of jail. Most drug dealers out of jail, I would argue. I know they say that, oh, this is just for personal use. You do understand that drug dealers understand how to play the law, right? Just a little bit, just a little tiny bit. We know that because we see how drug dealers have adapted to the idea of not arresting or prosecuting anyone with under X amount of illicit substance on their person. They just carry less. They still sell it. They carry less. They do that because they know it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. Initiative 1715 is exactly the same thing. Now, there was a Zoom call with the Tacoma Council on this topic. A big fan of this idea is Keith Blocker. He is the deputy mayor of the city of Tacoma. He's on the council. And he likes it.
There are a lot of people who still have, you know, possession charges on their records, and it could impact their ability to get financial aid. It could impact their ability to get employment opportunities. And there's other people that, you know, do have like really serious addictions that generally speaking need help or need some kind of support. And the way we've been operating, you know, with dealing with people who are struggling with addiction, we're incarcerating them and we're not giving them the adequate services and support that they need.
So there is a lot of sense to be made of his argument there. It's true. I admit that. Because I don't take the position that just because someone is using, they should be immediately thrown in jail. There are consequences with that. But understand the context in this state as it relates to jailing someone who is an addict. It takes an act of God to throw someone in jail for simply using any drug. When we're talking about throwing drug addicts in jail right now, say in Seattle, it's because they're committing a secondary crime, an assault, harassment of some kind. Someone who's shooting up in a park, you think they get arrested? Show me that case. I'd love to see it. And show me the case in which they actually get prosecuted. I'll wait. You can find out all this information online. It's almost impossible for that to happen. I believe jail will not work for everybody, but I do believe it works for some. I think when we're talking about someone who is addicted to drugs, so far gone that they don't even realize what it is they're doing, well, I always will support, so long as there's not another crime involved, while I will always support treatment, sometimes putting someone in jail does help. Sometimes it gives them a consequence to their action that's going to completely change the direction of their life once they become sober in jail. By saying you're not going to throw some people in jail, when we're not talking about the hardcore addicts, but the people who are very clearly going down that path, you are making it easier for them to not hit rock bottom. We hear that a lot, don't we? They need to be ready for help, and they got to hit rock bottom. Dare I say, for some people, putting them in jail for a weekend or longer gets them to hit that bottom much quicker than not? There's got to be some consequences to their behavior. But decriminalizing drugs, understand, you're making it harder to go after the drug dealers. Not because solely the drug dealers are going to be able to manipulate this and evolve with this law so they're able to continue to sell. Push that aside for a moment. You're making it harder for police to do their job, which is going up to that individual who is very clearly strung out, who is very clearly purchasing drugs on the streets. You are not giving that officer the leverage to throw jail time in their face. So if they don't turn on their drug dealer, you go to that addict and you say, by the way, while they're already strung out and maybe while they're coming down from that high and they are dying for another hit of whatever it is they're taking, you say, you know what, I'm going to throw you in jail. And what you're feeling right now as you're coming down from that high, that is going to be way, way, way worse spending the weekend in jail without any access to the heroin or the cocaine that you're using. I will not arrest you and throw you in jail if you tell me who your drug dealer is. When you take away their ability to arrest and charge, you make it harder for the cops, for law enforcement, to go after those drug dealers. And then, of course, I wonder about what you're doing to that person who right now, legitimately, the only reason why they might not be taking drugs is because they are concerned about getting arrested. Are you making it just a little bit easier for that one person, whether we're talking about an adult or a child, to take that one step towards that pathway of drug addiction? I don't think it is a coincidence that we've seen so many more children overdosing and some of them dying as a result of taking something that's usually laced with fentanyl. There was a string of them, high schoolers, who died as a result of that last year. We covered it pretty extensively. I don't think it's a coincidence that that happened. I think that when you've created a society that says we're not going to punish, really, when we're talking about drugs, you make it a little bit easier for that kid to say, oh, okay, maybe I will try it this one time. What's good? What's the worst that's going to happen? I'm going to have a great Saturday night, and I'm not going to have to go to jail for it. But this idea that automatically, if you are arrested, associated with some sort of drug charge, that your life is over. Dare I play this audio from the deputy mayor?
One time in my past life, I was arrested for marijuana possession, a dime bag, right? So those are the people I'm trying to protect.
He's trying to protect those people like him, whose life was ruined now that he's deputy mayor of Tacoma. He turned his life around, and I'm willing to bet that a part of getting back on that right path and not continuing to be a marijuana user, and this, of course, was at the time when it was illegal here, I'm willing to bet that that night in jail actually taught him a lesson. And it kind of sounds like he's doing well with himself. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is he going to be on the show?
No. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He doesn't want to debate it?
Never got back to me.
I'm sensing a trend. Is it possible it's you and it's not me?
I think it's you.
It's me?
They don't know who I am, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. There is a new silly controversy having to do with President Trump. People pretending that they don't know what he was saying. Have you seen Badge of Honor get thrown around on Twitter mocking the president, claiming that he said it was a badge of honor to have a whole bunch of sick people with the coronavirus? That's what these people are saying. And even in the context of the full quote, which to me is crystal clear, I certainly concede that the way sometimes the president talks makes it easy to take stuff out of context. This doesn't seem like that at all. I think when you hear this clip, you'll understand the context. But even in the context, there's some people saying, I don't even know what he's talking about. What? I don't know. That's a head scratch. Why would he say something like that? Well, let's listen to the actual clip.
So if you're testing 14 million people, you're going to find many more cases. Many of these people aren't very sick, but they still go down as a case. So actually, the number of cases, and we're also a much bigger country than most. So when we have a lot of cases, I don't look at that as a bad thing. I look at that as, in a certain respect, as being a good thing, because it means our testing is much better. So if we were testing a million people instead of 14 million people, we would have far fewer cases, right? So I view it as a badge of honor. Really, it's a badge of honor. It's a great tribute to the testing and all of the work that a lot of professionals have done.
Is that unclear? He's saying it's a badge of honor to be in a position where you're doing so much testing. I thought we wanted to do more testing. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? That's what Governor Jay Inslee is saying. He said, we can't even reopen the state until we get more testing done. So if you're doing more testing than other countries, Is that not something to be proud of, or should we be ashamed? I don't quite under it. Is it the opposite of badge of honor? Should you hang your head in shame? I heard you have more testing than anybody else. For shame! We want less testing. It is so ridiculous to me. It is so ridiculous to me. And yet you've got some bad faith people like Doug Jones, the senator from Alabama, going on MSNBC acting like, I don't know what he's even talking about.
I'm scratching my head too. I mean,
what are you scratching your head for? Maybe it was just itchy and that was unrelated to the rest of his comment. Oh no, he's scratching his head about the comment.
It's not just the logic, it's the math. I mean, the fact is that there are people in this country that have this virus and that are going to get it. We need more testing to determine who.
Wait, hold on. Is he saying we need more testing? Should we be proud of the more testing that we're doing and the faster we can get it going? That's the good thing, right? That's what we want, yeah?
That is. The fact that we have more testing doesn't mean that the virus is spreading on its own because we're doing testing.
That's not what he said, dum-dum. What world are we living in, Peyton?
We are living
in what world? Put your beverage down!
It's a Twilight Zone episode.
What world? Did the president in that clip say that people don't get sick if we don't test? He was talking about the data, and he said it over and over and over again some more. He's made the point in the past that some people attack him for the rates of infections, right? They see it going up. But he says the reason why it's going up is because we're doing the testing. We know that it's out there. And by doing the testing, that number will increase the amount of people who are sick. He's saying if you don't do the testing, the amount of people who are sick as it relates to the amount of people in this country would be very, very low. If we had one test, it would show that we have a very, very low rate of infection from a data perspective, which again, he has made that point multiple times, including in the context of the clip we just played. They have created a reality in which nothing the president can do will be treated fairly or honestly. None whatsoever. The president is not wrong in that statement. The funny thing is, I saw that comment being made in real time, and not at one point did I say, oh, that's going to be controversial. We reach new lows every single day. And I don't remember I think it was Ari Melber who asked the question of him. He did the same thing.
Oh, I don't know why the president would say something like, why would he say it's a good thing? It's a badge of honor to do more testing.
Because you guys just said for the last month we need more testing, and we're doing better testing than any other country. That's why. And by the way, the more positive cases in which people are not dying or dead, that's also a positive. You want to know why? Because it brings the death rate down. I know that a lot of folks on the left don't want to have the conversation, the full conversation about the numbers, because they want you to think that if you catch the coronavirus, it's a death sentence, which it of course is not. You have a very, 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 very low rate of mortality if you get this, with the exception of the people who are in that very specific age demographic, 60 plus, and it's made worse if you've got an underlying health condition, some underlying health conditions. But they want you to believe. They want you to believe that what the president, oh my gosh. Is it something in the air? In the water? Or is it just all being driven by pure hatred of this man? I've never seen someone vilified on a dime. Sometimes there is no doubt the president says things that he should not say. He says it sometimes in an inarticulate way, I think. Some of his tweets are mean. Go ahead and criticize that if you want, and we can have that conversation. But why are we criticizing things that legitimately no reasonable or sane person could find any sort of objection to? How desperate must they be to get this man out of office, the guy who was not supposed to be president, Hillary supposed to be in the White House? She was the heir apparent. Trump is some brash business reality show dude from New York. He's not supposed to be president. But I guess Doug Jones is supposed to be a senator. Hillary Clinton was supposed to be president. Got it. I see how it works. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. When we come back, there was a fatal shooting in Seattle yesterday by cops. Of course, the activists are going after the cops. We'll tell you why that's wrong when we return.